what would you tell your younger self from what you know today?
I don't work hard to be perfect. I don't, because that's when I always measure myself to the system. And value what I would say the boring. So what's the boring? The run of the mill, when the family's in your business, the cousins are over, the aunts and the uncles are all, you know, whatever. Because right now, to me, those were the good old days.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to an episode of The Purpose Pivot, a podcast in partnership with MarketScale. Today, I am so excited to sit with you're like family, Pat. So I am so excited to sit here with Patricia David, who I had the pleasure of being introduced to through my mother because of their long professional history together and has been such a guide to me in my professional life. So I'm so excited to have this episode with you, Pat. We've now gotten to know each other in so many ways over the years, but just touching upon your career, I mean, you have had such an impact in the corporate world and really also your background in technology and guiding some of the most successful CEOs in the industry. So really excited for you to talk to us a little bit more about how you bring that mindset to the people that you coach. And I know the audience is going to walk away with a couple of tidbits that they're going to be able to take for themselves. So Pat, thank you so much. And maybe you could also tell the audience a little bit deeper about, you know, what that career has been and then the executive coaching that you do today.
Well, I have to first say that I wish I was in the same room with you because I want to give you a hug. This is my to you and your mom. Melissa, you know I love you. I love you too. You're a gem, an absolute gem. So thank you for inviting me to participate in this great podcast. But just kind of giving people a summary of kind of how I got from there to here and then the coaching practice. I actually began my career in corporate in finance accounting at Philip Morris. This is back in the day. And I transitioned back then to technology application development at Merrill Lynch, where I then moved on to a company that used to exist, Salomon Smith Barney, which became Citigroup. And at that company, I was the head of technology for all of the human resources systems. So I kind of had a backdoor view of how HR operates. I then became the chief of staff of the CIO, and that position led me to be the senior diversity advisor for JPMorgan Chase, which I did for about 9 years. And then I retired. And so when I go back and I look at all the roles that I played, especially when I was a senior manager, I actually had a front row seat to hear the talent process, the recruiting process, compensation, and anything that had to do with those employee applicants and those milestones of what an employee goes through with these firms. So I heard the secrets, if you will, of how things happen and how they don't. And I was able to understand why some people actually move ahead and why others are stagnant, even if they work hard. I was able to hear thousands of employees come into my office and talk about during their career what they're going through on a day-to-day basis, which the company doesn't have a lens to, right? People see the work, but not the mind behind how the work gets done. And many people figured they work really hard, but almost didn't matter, right? Mm-hmm. So my coaching practice was centered around telling people the secrets, like how come I didn't get this and how come I didn't get that? So I've spent a lot of time, even when I was working, telling individuals, here's what I learned about why your situation was what the way it was. Mm-hmm. So I firmly believe, I really believe this, that all of the work I've ever done, even my 4 years as a manager at Burger King in the Bronx on Gun Hill Road, when I was going to college, kind of to the senior diversity advisor role at JP Morgan, gave me the skills to coach people. And so with all that advice that I have given to people, many times people would say, you should write a book. So I did.
I have your book. We're going to talk about this a little bit too.
Not a problem. Not a problem. But that's I learned the secrets and I said, I can't keep these secrets to myself. So I exposed the truth. That's kind of how my coaching practice kind of got created, because people kind of pushed me in that direction.
Well, I mean, I can attest to the fact that that is your gift. And, you know, I think a lot of people underestimate it. Five people can be in a room and have the same idea, but how they deliver it, how they, you know, right, how they present it, mm-hmm. the perspective of that, it all makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, you've been so instrumental in helping me be able to see that. Like, I know what I want to achieve, but let's step back and say, okay, how are we going to go about that? Mm-hmm. Makes a huge, huge difference. What are some of the, you know, trends, I think is the best way to say it, that I think the audience can take away so they could see it within themselves. Like, what are some of the key attributes, if you could name three on each side, that keep somebody able to move ahead versus being stagnant?
So when you think about career growth, because people go to work in the morning and they really believe that if they do their job, keep their nose clean, the right things will happen. I say, yes, but. So it's not all about just paying your dues and putting in the time, the hours, the travel, the hustle, right? The grit, and there's three words for this thing, that you will get rewarded. You get promotion, you get money, and you get industry accolades, right? That's not false. But the reality is, in today's environment, when I think about the generations after me and after that generation, that is not what they want. They want to feel purpose. They want to go home satisfied that anything that they did, the hours that they spent, actually had meaning. And I don't think the companies have caught up with that. There's a lot of language out there, you know, take a wellness break, don't forget to take your vacation. That's nice and interesting, but somebody has to worry about what's happening in my head. And you can't see what's happening in my head. The other thing that I would tell people is, you talk about the career ladder. When you think about a ladder, it's steps. AVP, VP, director, MD, and it's this way. Careers don't go that way. They go left and right. Companies talk about the ladder. They need to show you what I would call the lattice. I move forward, I move forward, I'm sideways. I go down, I go left. I go in, I go out, I go. Because if you're just going to make me believe the only way to get be successful is this way, that's kind of a limited track. And I think people struggle with that, because when they look in front of them and they see, oh my God, I have to go that far to get that much, I don't have enough hours in the day, right? And so people kind of get concerned about that. The other myth or thing that I would tell people, and it happened to me, right? If careers, you have to start over. I switched careers and I didn't start over. I was a finance and accounting person. Then I became a technology person. And then I get to be the diversity. How does that happen? And I don't,
how does that happen?
I don't code. I'm not a developer in that regard, right? But what I was able to do in my technology practice when I worked at Citigroup and JPMorgan Chase, when I did those roles, I know how to deliver applications that are bulletproof, and I know how to look at data. So I use that skill, which was new, meaning other people who did my role didn't have that skill. So that was my superpower. So that's how I was able to differentiate myself. So I would tell people, think about what you bring to the table. And how is that special? Like, and you use what you're giving, really, as opposed to try to follow the herd. I always tell people the herd gets slaughtered. So never follow the herd. When you literally think about the herd of cattle and they become hairy.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Create your own path. So those are the things that I would tell people that they have to do. And you know, well-being, unfortunately, is in the shadows. Now it's on the table. It's literally on the table. I mean, I can give you some stats. You probably know this as well. 1 in 4 people in this country are going to suffer from anxiety and depression.
Which is, I mean, that's a staggering number. That's staggering.
Think about your own family. That's like, oh my God, it's at least X number of people. The other stat that I heard was after 2017, there were 3 times more people that have depression and anxiety than ever did before. And that's pre-COVID.
That's pretty cool. I think it's all the digital connection that we have, and you being with a tech background.
There we go. I'm telling you, people need other people. I need to engage and talk and hear and listen versus be at my desk and work all day and put my head down. It's not healthy. It's not for your body, you know?
And no, I mean, the ailments that I started to get over COVID with my neck and my shoulders and my back. So there's the physical, but the mental.
The mental. How many times have people gone to get a physical checkup? And how many times has that doctor ever said, so how's it going up here? Because we explain this away, right? We explain, and what, now, Melissa, I'll tell you, I still coach a lot of senior people. Even though the company supports coaching for this individual, the company might say, can you help this person with executive presence? Can you help this person with leading with, no problem, I can do all that. But then when I talk to the employee and I have a person on the screen and they don't want to talk about that. They want to talk about, look, I've done the hustle, I've done the grit, but something is happening up here and I don't know what to do. The company has no lens to that at all. And I'm hearing all these secrets. So now when I coach people, that's the first thing they talk about. That has never happened before. So that's new for me.
Yeah. Well, you have to be right here in order to be able to live some of the attributes that you're talking about of empathy and right. You don't always have the capacity to bring that to your work or to your leadership if you don't feel grounded yourself.
Or safe. Senior leaders would not vulnerable if it's going to cost them their job, the money, and the title. Because the infrastructure, at least in corporate America, Wall Street firms, financial service, the structure does not allow for weakness.
Right.
It doesn't allow you to slow down and take a break, even though that's there's policies and procedure, take a sip, all that's there.
But it's frowned upon if you actually use it, usually.
It's like, how could you? How might, right? It becomes almost like a, you've almost kind of dissed the environment, you know? And
yeah.
People worry about that, but no one talks about it.
So how do you take what you're saying and apply it to kind of the evolution of a thought process if it's not a ladder, it's a lattice? Because if you are able to zig and zag versus worrying about I'm just shooting straight up, then theoretically you should be able to incorporate some of what you're talking about.
You should be. And so I think what people need to do, and I tell, so one of it's going back to one of my Davidisms, I think what people need to do is you almost have to say, let's forget about the noise out there because I am like nobody else. Neither are you. We're humans. And that's kind of where will we equal and will we end be equal? My life experience, my values, what I believe in is mine. Mm-hmm. I think people need to refocus on themselves and almost say, okay, who am I? What do I really want? And you got to be honest with yourself. I don't want what you want. I want what I want. And not only what I want, but when do I want that? And am I willing to put the work in for me to get that for myself? These are hard questions. But if people don't have support to put that question on the table, they are alone. They will be trapped into the social media answer, what WebMD tells them to do, and they'll just be struggling. They'll be active, they'll be moving, but they will be literally going around in circles. And I think people need to sometimes take a pause and say, when I coach people, which is one of the reasons why people said write the book, because I'm going to say 100 out of 100% of the time, when I would coach people, junior people, senior people, all kinds of people, men, women, boys, girls, it didn't matter. I'm very keen on, tell me everything that I need to know so I can give you the prescription. You got to tell me everything, the good and the bad. Tell me everything. Mm-hmm. And through that exchange, what I try to understand is do I believe what you're saying to me? Do I really believe this? And are you the person that can actually take a 10 milligram or should I give you a 20 milligram? I look at it as prescription, right?
Yeah, right.
And from that, going back to your question, so you have to be honest with somebody, if not yourself, on how, what's your ailment? What are you? Don't try to be strong with the weakness. If it hurts, say it hurts. And don't try to say, well, it's only a 5, but it's really a 10, but you're not saying it. You have to be brutally honest if you really want to make that change. And then figure out, okay, what am I willing to do? What am I actually willing to do about this? Well, somebody said, if you're going to have a discussion, solve a problem, and all you're doing is talking, and you're just having a conversation, you're not really solving anything. So the outcome of you doing your self-assessment with what you really want to do, no matter what people say, other people not living your life, you have to just do it. You literally have to just do it, right? But people, yeah. they don't jump to that. They kind of listen to all the feedback and this. When people give you advice, they're giving it to you as if they lived your life and they didn't. So how good is that advice?
From their perspective, right?
It's a dangerous thing. It's a dangerous thing, you know? And people can take small wins. A small change is success. You don't have to try to boil the ocean.
Yeah. I mean, in my book, which you are endorser of on the back cover, so I appreciate that so much. I wrote a line, what if your body knows the truth before your mind will fully accept it? And you replied, this is such a profound statement. When I read it, it truly made me think about my own life and experience. And just thinking of all the things you're sharing, can you expand upon what my statement made you think?
Yeah, it almost brought me to tears in a good way. Like, oh my God, thank God somebody said it. now it's written, so no one can unwrite it. You know, so it goes back to body versus mind, right? I'm from the West Indies, okay, and so what is that? Why do I say that? And everything that we do is we self-medicate. We go in the backyard, we get the bushes, we boil them up. We find that one flower that has that medicinal quality to cure anything. You got a sunburn? Get aloe. I say that to say, we explain everything away, right? My cousin, I'm going to try when I say this, but she would say she feels great. Sometimes you might say she feels nauseous. So it's okay. Get the bush tea, get some ginger, get some cinnamon, put some turmeric in there. Not too much because turmeric will kill you. But
I mean, I've been seeing that on Instagram. I'm a little nervous about turmeric right now.
But just a little bit because it helps, you know, the inflammation of the stomach and all this other good stuff. But when you look in the mirror, if you looked at this person, she would look healthy. Don't I look healthy to you, don't I? I look healthy.
Sure.
You can't see what's behind my skin. Right? Neither can I. Right? But and people say, hey, you look great. So I figure, oh, I guess I look great, so I can't be sick. You literally are telling your mind, get out of the way, you got it wrong, and all this other stuff. Now, we may even go to the doctor, as I said earlier, we're going to get test results, but no one ever checks in here. So what I tell people is, and even as children, you tell your kids, your body is important. Your body's the authority. Your body knows better. Like, okay, yeah, that's true. But I don't know, there's something in the back of my head that tells me something's not right. But no one tells me what that is, so I kind of explain it away. So my relative, and I don't want to tell you who he was, because if he finds out that I talked about him, he'll probably get mad. But okay. Was the picture of health from head to toe. The picture of health. Picture of health. Fast forward, this person had a near-death experience from a physical health problem that went unnoticed and untreated until it was almost too late, which means his choices for recovery was very limited. If you speak to him today, what he will tell you that there was a voice in the back of his head that kept on sending him alerts that he was ignoring because he could not believe what he was hearing himself say. You should check this. And me on the other side of that, I don't have any tools. I don't have anything in the medicine cabinet. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what it looks like. So I'm like, take a rest, relax. It'll go away. Can't you just fix it? The answer is NF. W. Bad, bad, bad. Excuse my French. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Complete denial. Complete denial. Yeah. So when I heard you make that statement, I'm like, you know what? People better listen to that little voice in their head. Mm-hmm. Nothing to lose. Worst case, you're wrong, but you better.
Worst case, you're wrong. Yeah.
But my relative almost didn't make it because of that.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. I mean, I think it's like that intuition, you know, and there's a lot of thought about it's, you know, that's intuition's not real and it's just, you know, but it is. I mean, you have this innate sense in you and your body is communicating with you if you're willing to listen to it. It's actually telling you a lot.
There we go. But that's the key. If you're willing to listen, how many times people, I'm too busy. I'm too busy. You're too busy. You just kill yourself now then. Like just go, okay, see ya. You're taking up space, I would tell people. You know, but we don't get taught to take care of ourselves in that kind of way, right? Even if you look at you.
It's like we get taught in it as a secondary, as a nice to have, not as a high priority of a lot of other things that we prioritize.
Yeah, and you know, companies tried many years ago with, you know, if you walk 10,000 steps, we'll give you a cookie. If you walk 20,000 steps, we'll give you a whistle and a cookie. You know, that whole, I'm like, that's nice. And that's kind of, it. Those things are helpful, but they don't get to the root of the issue, right? And I think what you said earlier, with the way technology is ruling our lives, you cannot escape social media. You cannot escape the news. You don't even know what's true. People are hoping that you and I are real people. I could be.
I know.
It makes you wonder, what is the truth? Mm-hmm. Right? And chasing a tagline is not healthy, right? You know, I mean, to know that people can use social media to steal your children or sadly have people commit suicide is kind of scary, if you ask me.
That's a whole topic in itself, for sure. And I think it causes so much mental stress that I think people discount the impact of that. So if we, because I have your book, you have your straight shooting, her story answers to 30 years of career questions. What are two or three that you could share with this audience as a teaser? Because then of course they're going to need to buy your book.
You know, when I think of this term called Davidism, somebody actually told me, hey, that's a Davidism. I'm like, what the hell does that mean? You know, I have a habit, a bad way, a good way, of I might teach somebody something, but then I'll come up with a tagline and if they forget the lesson, but they remember the tagline, they'll remember the lesson. And it's usually like so simple to remember. So one of the ones I tell people, and this one is really important, it's race against yourself. I don't know how many times people will come to me and say, you know what, Melissa and I graduated on the same day. We work in the same company. How come she's a managing director and I'm not? You know, Joey and I went to the same school, and how is he getting all these degrees and I can't get access to these people? Are you chasing someone else's plan? What is your plan? Never be on the defense of something, be on the offense. So my whole point is race against you. I race, sometimes I lose against myself, but I race against me. I will never race against you. I hope you don't race. It's not healthy. So that's thing number one. So race against yourself. And the joke of that one is, it's actually in my book, but I'll tell you this little piece. So a cousin of mine said to me, you know what? I'm making $10. And I started the same day as Melissa, and she's making 12. So I should get 12. So you know what I said to him? I said, so you're making 10, right? He goes, yeah. I said, what happened if she was making 9? Would you ask for a reduction in pay?
Oh, that's a good question.
So what are we doing?
Because it's not, don't benchmark yourself. There's a book that I am slowly reading because my mom bought this for me, The 15 Lies Women Are Told in the Workplace. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it kind of goes to this, like, instead of focusing on, you know, I know my worth. It's like, yeah. Right? It's work for your worth.
There we go. It's all of that. But how, we don't get taught any of that. Right. Thank God for these conversations. People are like, oh my God, I didn't know that. Now people know what it's called. Now they can actually do it. Another one is, and this one actually happened a couple of times, always be ready so you don't have to get ready. That actually happened to my family. So I better be ready because I never know when my husband will say, hey, let's go shopping. Right. But anyhow, but it happens in business. And how does it happen in business? This happens with interns a lot, right? Interns come to work in the summer in a company and it's a global firm. And sometimes they might want the intern to, you know, go to London to be with that team to make that pitch. Intern doesn't have a passport. Well, always have a passport so you don't. It's one of these, like, always be ready so you don't have to get ready. The other one that people do to themselves, they shoot themselves in the foot. They become the only person that knows how to do something in a company. So that person, if I was the only person who knew how to run that report, if there's an opportunity for me, people say, well, you know, we can't give it to Pat because she's the only one that can run this report. So we can't give her this exposure. We can't give her this promotion. We can't let her take a time off. We can't invite her to this conference. So it's called single man syndrome. Don't do that to yourself. And the last one, plan the work, then work the plan.
Great. Tell us about that.
That's it. So you plan the work. What is the work? So let's say I want to buy a house. Okay. You want to buy the house. That's nice. What's the plan to? So the plan is to buy a house. If I looked at your plan, tell me all the actions you're doing to make that happen. And then you hit radio silence. Great plan, but there's no action. And the way you do the action, it's called the GROW model, GROW. So what is the goal? What is the reality of that actually happening? What are any obstacles or observations? And what is the will and when? You tell me that, then I believe that what you just said is going to happen. If not, it's just a plan on a piece of paper. People are lazy.
Well, I like that you end with that one, because one of the questions I have is, in thinking of your Davidisms, you know, a lot of what's required for people to do that is change management as an individual. You dealt with it on a corporate level, right? But what are some tips that you can give to people? They're going to read your book. This is going to resonate in the moment of them reading it. Yeah. But in order to actualize this.
There's two things that they can do. You know, and change management, I'm actually working with a company right now. And they had a great idea to do a strategy. We had a consultant firm come in and say, here's exactly what you have to do with the charts and the plan. I was like, oh, that's great. You know, 3-4 weeks passed, 4 weeks passed. And I'm thinking to myself, the plan has no life. And so why is that? So the two tips that people can use to incorporate things in their life, and I'll give you an example of one that's actually happening. But the first one is, start small. Just think of one small change at a time. Get the win. Take the win.
Take the win and acknowledge the win, right? I think you have to celebrate, like take the small step and celebrate the small step.
Exactly.
Because that'll also help you get to the next step.
Next step, that's it. Like going back to don't try to boil the ocean, right? So when we actually developed application systems, if we was going to implement a new payroll system, and a payroll system has to hit, I don't know, 65 to 70 countries and different currencies, you think we're going to run that overnight and say, okay, we're live? Absolutely not.
It'd be a disaster.
Yeah, what are you crazy? You tried the smallest country that you're going to have the most success with. Okay, let's try the U.S. because there's one federal rate, there's one tax, you know. But don't try. So you do that and you feel accomplished. Say, okay, now let's try another country. The second thing people can do, and this one is so, my cousin is doing this one now. Incorporate a new practice into something you already do. So my cousin had to have surgery the other day. So now she has to take this medication for the rest of her life. And I don't want her to forget taking that medication. I don't want her to take that with her normal pills after breakfast. I say, do me a favor. After you brush your teeth, take that damn pill, which is exactly what she does. So it's not like a new, I don't have to remember it. A brush teeth pill. It's part of my routine.
Part of the routine, yeah.
Because if you add something new, it becomes, oh, it's a new task. I have to make time for it. It's the first thing that's going to go because it's new. But if it's part of your natural order, so now today, this is going on for 3 weeks. I don't have to remind her to take that pill. As long as she brushes the teeth, which I know she does every day.
Yes. Because you're working it into her routine. That's already happening.
And she brushes the teeth on vacation, wherever she is. Right? Sometimes when people say, I'm going to exercise, and they go on vacation. Yeah, not today. I'm on vacation. Well, I guess you were not really interested on being healthy because you decided to forego that when you're on vacation. I don't understand. So those are my two tips. Take the win and then incorporate it in something already due. And then, like you said, celebrate that little win. Yay.
Yeah, it's an accomplishment. And I think we forget to do that. We're so easy on beating up ourselves because I didn't do the full thing versus acknowledging, okay, I took the first step. Now I'm going to take the next step.
Right. That's it. That's it. So that's what I would tell people to do. And that's what I do. You know, and look, if you fail, that's okay, right? Fail.
Okay. Fail. You learn more from failure anyway.
Let me tell you something on that. If a person ever wanted to work for me and I was interviewing them and I said, Melissa, tell me a time when things didn't go right. And you say, well, that's never actually happened. I'm like, well, you're not working for me because you haven't figured out how to be better than you are. Like, not on my watch.
Right. Exactly.
Failure. And then, you know, failure is healthy, but fail fast. Fail fast.
Fail fast. Right. Acknowledge it. What was wrong in that? What would I do different? And then get to the next space. So I've learned that a lot for sure over the last few years. Well, we can go through your book because forever, I feel like, because there's so many tips and talking to you, but I want to go into some more rapid fire questions too, because I think that'd be great for our audience to be able to like wrap their head around. So the first one, especially after the robust career that you've had, what would you tell your younger self, especially about well-being and seeing the technologically advanced world we're living in, the impact of that? What would you tell your younger self about well-being from what you know today?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't work hard to be perfect. I don't. And I would also say it's a trap. It's a trap because that's when I was measuring myself to the system. And value what I would say the boring. So what's the boring? The run of the mill, when the family's in your business, the cousins are over, the aunts and the uncles are all, you know, whatever. Cause right now, to me, those were the good old days.
Yeah, it's true. I used to be terrible at that. Terrible. And I would drive my husband crazy because every weekend, what are we doing? What are we doing? Where are we going to go? That's and now that I'm older, I'm like, I'm so happy we don't have plans. Mm-hmm. And like, I could be spontaneous. And it took me a long time to get there. But especially when you're moving at the pace that we all are today and you're always in that flight or fight mode,
right.
The boring is what helps like re-centralize you, recalibrate you, and you know? And sometimes that's when you have the best thoughts.
That's when you have the best thoughts. And I tell, so now when we're doing crazy stuff with people and family, I say, you know what, hey, remember this, because this is the good old days right here. This, yeah. You're hitting it now, but you're going to be like, boy, I wish my cousins were in my kitchen right now making a mess, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay. You kind of shared some through your Davidisms, but what are the three words of wisdom that ground you when you need it?
Well, I tell you, this one makes me cry too. So my dad, he's passed away, but he would always say, keep pushing, kid. He would always tell me, keep pushing, keep pushing. And my mother, she's actually, I have a quote of in my book about her. And she would always say, even if my mouth was full of food, she'd say, did you eat? Did you eat? And I say that because my parents came here as a sacrifice. They went from Dominica to England to America. And they were like in their 20s. When they got to England, that's when they got married and had three kids. I'm one of the kids. And then they came to America so we don't have to share shoes. And so that's what it is. Because my mother's one of nine. My father's one of 11. You know, shoes in the family thing, right? And I remember, I'm so grounded because I say to myself, you know what? My parents came here for me to have a better life than they could have ever envisioned. So I dare not throw away their sacrifice. I dare not. I should not complain about anything. My mother fed four people and she didn't work. It was always in the fridge. Went to Catholic school. So how can I complain if I have thousands times more what they ever had? I don't deserve to complain. So I stay grounded in my parents came here as a sacrifice to provide me with what I have today. So I cannot complain about not having anything. It's not right. So I'm a giver. that, but
you are a giver.
I'm more of a giver and keep pushing, yeah. Keep going. Okay, Dad, I'll keep chugging along. And he would always say, you'll figure it out. I'm like, oh yeah, I guess I will.
Well, it's good to have that confidence, right? Like when you feel stuck and being able to have the faith of, no, I'm going to figure it out. Yeah. I think that helps you get through those tough times.
Yeah, it certainly does. It certainly does. It certainly does.
Well, I know you have an always learning mentality. So what are your must read books or podcasts in terms of shaping your perspective? And I'm going to tie it to well-being, your perspective of integrating well-being into your life.
So this is going to sound weird. Beyond your book, obviously. I love your book. You know, I love your book.
Thank you so much.
I'm 66, which means I went on to Medicare. I didn't do Social Security. I'm like, yeah, let me do the benefits. So because mm-hmm. of that, I logged in, I signed up for all their articles. And I cannot tell you how many articles that they send on mental health, mental wellness. Mm-hmm. And I can't get enough of them. I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. And it's not only food, but how you can manage your mind and how you can. So I read Medicare articles. I know that's not what you wanted to hear.
No, I mean, hey, I want to know the secrets, right? Like sometimes you get the best wisdom in unexpected places.
And the other one that I like, I've always loved, I like Harvard Business Review. I like them a lot. So I'm always,
me too.
I just, yeah. You know what? I trust their research. It's unbiased. It's factual. It's not, you know, thousands and thousands of pages. And it's something that I've done for many, many years. So HBR and Medicare.
I love it. I have those little pocketbooks too. Sometimes I'll be at the airport. I'm like, oh, I just want a book, and I'll grab one of those HBR books, and it's like a summary of a certain topic. So I love that. Well, this was so great. I think the audience learned so much from you. And you know, while you're not, you know, you've retired, you're not really totally retired because you are the founder now of Patricia David Consulting, and you consult senior professionals, and you continue to help people navigate their careers, and organizations also navigate that and continue to be a thought leader. So, you know, I think we are lucky that we're able to tap into your mindset a little bit for, you know, just under 30 minutes and get some of those words of wisdom.
But I want to applaud you seriously as a senior, successful businesswoman to be this vulnerable, to put it out there in a way that people can understand. And it's in English. It's so helpful. It's really, you know, you read these books sometimes, I'm like, what does that word mean? What are they trying to say? And you have examples upon examples, and you personalize it, and it resonates with people. So I just want to applaud you for having this conversation in this forum. And I really hope that the audience is like, wow, I need to really pay attention to this, because this could be for people's livelihood, really. It's that powerful in my mind.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. And you've definitely been a big part of my journey. So I appreciate all the times that you've gotten on the phone with me and shared your wisdom and grounded me and helped me with that perspective to make sure I know how to, the secrets to keep moving forward.
That's right. Thank you very much, Melissa.
So everybody, again, this is Patricia David. You're on LinkedIn. So I know sometimes she's sharing her words of wisdom there. You can follow her there and really appreciate the time you took with us today.
Thank you.